This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's February the 9th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Bruce Bostard is away this afternoon, but if luck will have it, we'll talk with somebody about the cash grain markets today. And then a bit later in the program, we'll take a complete look at the USDA and the Bush administration's Farm Bill proposal. It all comes up in this Friday edition of AM580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago, on this February the 9th, a Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat for the soft red at $4.60 and a quarter, up 3 1/4. The May at $4.75 3/4, up 3 1/4. And from the corn pit, the nearby March contract, a 6.5 cent gain today at $4.06 1/4. May futures there at $4.18, up 6 1/4. July at $4.24 1/4, up 6.5. And September's at $4.09 3/4, up 4 1/4. December futures, $3.99 1/4, up 2 3/4 for the corn today. March contract in the bean pit, $7.49 1/4, 5.5 cents higher. The May futures up 5 1/4 at $7.65 1/2. And the July futures at $7.78 1/2 were up 4 3/4. November beans at $8.01, a settlement price up 6 1/4 for the day. March bean meal futures at $2.17.90, they were up $2.60. March bean oil down 9 at $30.34. From the Mercantile Exchange, off a dime in the nearby March feeder cattle at $98.77 1/2 a hundredweight. February live cattle at $93.20 were down 15 cents, and the April futures there at $94.80. were off 7.5 cents. February lean hogs were up $1.10 at $66.27 1/2. From the outside markets, nearby March crude oil 19 cents higher at this hour, trading at $59.90 on the last tick. CRB index at 305.11, up 166. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,567 is down just about 70 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, as he does each and every Friday afternoon, is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Hi, Mike.
Hey there, Big Todd.
How was your trip with Dave Dickey last night to Effingham?
Very nice. Appreciate the nice turnout and the folks in Effingham and the nice, courteous invitation from Farm Bureau. Everybody was really nice. Had a good discussion the whole evening.
What did the discussion center on from the panel, and then was there a difference between what you were talking about and what the farmers were asking?
Not too much. I think the acres were the big thing that the panel was hitting upon. You know, as I remember, Dale and I Dale Dierkolts and I were fairly in the same camp as far as the planting delays and the potential there of corn going higher, especially in the front end and needing to ration. I remember Dale talking a lot about the livestock and their needs being met. You know, but with high prices, they're going to really get squeezed, especially the cattle guys. And then Dr. Good talked a lot about some of the acreage and how you're going to get big acreage pops in some areas of 20, 30, 40% because some guys aren't really going to change rotation. Those guys in Effingham seemed to say, because they were below 16, that they were not going to really change their acres and rotate into more corn, and they fit that category. So it was pretty interesting to find that out. They match up with a lot of the guys in Alney and in Vincennes, anywhere around that area where, you know, bean yields can be quite good, and if you have hot and dry weather, corn yields can get pretty good.
Let's take a look at what happened to the Board of Trade now, because it was kind of an interesting day, a fairly wide range. November beans at top today at 808 and a low at 788, a settlement price 801. They had a wide range. What was happening?
Well, they did, and it, you know, the things that came out of the report and the way the trade traded, I guess the best way to categorize it, Todd, would be the fundamentals are probably on the side of the feed grain still. And the funds, though, are still on the side of the beans. And those back-end beans especially found support probably on some news of hot, dry weather. And again, it goes back to what if we don't get the necessary number of bean acres planted because the corn shoots back up higher. So it seemed like the funds were probably in the back-end beans more than anything. Haven't seen anything on the early player sheets that would say that's right or wrong, but that's a guess here. Early player sheets say funds bought about 4,000 to 5,000 contracts of corn, 3,000 wheat, but 7,000 to 8,000 contracts in the beans. So they were in there about double on the beans than they were the corn or wheat. Now, if you go back to the percentage gains on the day, it followed more like the report. Corn was up 1.6%, meal was up 1.2%, beans and wheat, though, only up 0.7% roughly on the day. So it seemed like the percentage gains followed the fundamentals and the report and had a kind of a reversal of what this last week and a half's trade was. But in terms of the net buying by the funds, I would say you probably had more excitement in the beans and certainly those outside markets. By having a strong energy and strong metals market, you promoted the idea of buying commodities, too.
It was a big outside up day in the beans for both the lead option and the nearby and the deferred, the November contract. How did that take place during the day? When did those lows come?
Most of them came early in the day, and then you notice the spreads kind of took over. March beans stayed below 750 on a closing basis. We think that's fairly significant. No beans stayed above $8 on a closing basis. Again, fairly significant. We noticed today that the spreads worked, and we think that's, again, a fundamental play here. Corn spreads firm, probably on the report. Interesting to see the USDA talking about how Brazilian livestock demand is not slowing down as far as its corn utilization, and yet they're saying that the Chinese import demand for our beans are slowing down by 500,000 metric tons versus last month. We think that probably made a major play in the spreads, where the July was weaker than the November. A day trader friend of mine I talked to last night on the way down to Effingham to get his take on it was the funds are very heavily involved in the spreads right now because they are so nervous about the weather and they are so nervous about how long they themselves are. So it sounds like maybe they're not exactly net long in one contract. They're spreading themselves off to kind of hedge their bets as we get closer to March.
The 06-07 ending stocks report, of course, released at 7:30 this morning by USDA. No change in the corn or the wheat. 752 million for the corn, 472 million on the carryout for the wheat. The beans, they did manage to change. They went from 575 on the carryout to 595. I assume that's why we had the drop this morning.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. You know, the world soybean numbers also jumped over 2%, and the corn numbers also jumped a little over 1%. Again, the corn could have jumped a lot more because they raised the corn supply coming out of South America 6 million tons, but they only raised the ending stocks for the world 1.5. So we have a strong demand base, and especially at these price levels, we think that means a lot to the trade. But it's interesting to note with the soybean carryover increase in the world, we're dealing with almost a 20% stocks to use, whereas with the corn world-ending stocks to use, we're looking at just under 11%. So I think our marketing plan and our strategies are going to stay intact, where we want to be more aggressive sellers of beans on rallies and re-own more corn that we sell here on rallies.
Interesting that you should say that, because a day like today probably will bull up many farmers, and they're going to want to be hard holders of soybeans.
Oh, I think that's exactly right. When they saw it go above $8 in November, I think probably the gear switched to, well, we're heading towards $8.50, maybe even $9, and that's just fine. We won't hold back the market. We do want to note that the fundamentals are not on the side of continuing high prices, especially in the old crop. I think that's where the real distinction comes in, is if you're really worried about the beans and the upside potential, I guess we'd have to put it into a category of pod fill in August, and that means new crop. So I would suspect that if we're going to indeed get 100 million metric ton crop out of South America, March, May, July futures are going to struggle, especially if China's going to be more picky and more choosy about who they buy from. And the upside potential is probably in November, so it would not surprise us the next 2 or 3 months. But barring what USDA gives us on planting numbers, that the funds continue to buy that back-end new crop beans.
When we talked Wednesday, you wanted to discuss a little bit about the outside markets, crude oil in particular, I think. Anything changed there?
No, the crude oil continued its rally on some Iranian fears, and we also mentioned the S&P market and it having a top formation. Technically, that's continuing its path. It's dropped below a key moving average and back below its December high. So this week's close is going to be pretty key, and we're setting up a pretty long-term sell signal in that S&P especially.
All right. Go back for me just a bit, because when we talked, I want to talk about prices of both corn and soybeans, what you see over the next couple of weeks technically for them.
Sure. 437.5, I believe, was that July high in the corn market, Todd. We suspect that needs to go and get tested again and put in a true double top before anybody's really going to let go of a lot of bushels, especially if it's... Excuse me?
I'm sorry. I'm just thinking when that was put in, July high from...
Oh, that was probably the January high right after the report.
Okay.
Yeah, that was probably the July contract high right after the January
report.
Gotcha,
sure.
Yeah,
okay.
And so that we probably have to go up and do a double top type formation before anybody's going to let go of a lot before we see the USDA planted intentions number. The beans are a lot harder to call. The swing objective would say now that you're above 745 March, you can climb up to that 765, 770 level. I suspect, again, the March is going to struggle, but the Nov beans have an outlook, maybe 815, 820 area for its next resistance.
Anything else to add before we let you go? Maybe take a quick look at the livestock?
Sure. The meat markets were pretty solid today. Funds bought hogs. The bids and offers on cattle were very wide. Buyers wanted 87, sellers wanted 92. Not a lot got done here at the end of the week in the cattle. Weather still dominates both complexes, so they're probably going to watch those next week weather, temperature, winter storm coming down the pike here Monday, Tuesday. That'll probably play big into the mercantile exchange next week.
We appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, Todd, for having us. You're great.
All right. We appreciate you much. That's Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Friday afternoon. You can also hear him on Commodity Week. That airs at 11:30 a.m. from time to time, anyway. You can hear him. On Saturday mornings, you can also pick that up off our website at willag.org. At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Steve Hilberg, who is a climatologist at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here in Champaign County. Our own Mike Solo took a look at the forecast for tonight and today, and he says tonight, partly to mostly cloudy skies across the two-state region, lows will range from 5 below zero in northwestern Illinois to 15 in far southern parts of Illinois. Tomorrow in western Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy, elsewhere partly sunny. High, says Mike, ranging from 11 in northwestern Illinois to 32 in southern Illinois. The extended forecast calls for snow showers to bring a dusting of snow to northern and central sections late this weekend and early next week. Southern areas may get a mix of rain and some snow or possibly some freezing rain on Sunday night.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic Farm Marketing is now holding a series of risk management seminars throughout Illinois and Indiana. Information on seminar dates and locations is available at sfarmmarketing.com or 800-383-0046.
The next farm bill should be written this year. The Bush administration and U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Mike Johanns have taken a proactive stance in developing and releasing a proposal. Bob Thompson at the University of Illinois has taken a look at what it contains. He's an ag policy specialist and notes there are several keystone issues put forth by the president's plan.
The first thing they say is that if we just extended the 2002 farm bill unchanged, it looks like the projected expenditures would fall from about $20 to $8 billion per year, or maybe even a little less than $8 billion on their calculation. That will become the budget constraint on how much can be spent for farm programs. Now, I think the first interesting thing to come out of it is that the administration said we think that's too big a cut. And that basically they added back $5 billion onto what it would be if they just extended the 2002 Farm Bill unchanged into the future.
On the commodity programs, Thompson says it is clear the administration was listening to a number of groups that had said what really matters is revenue insurance, not price insurance. It is the product of yield times price that really matters in terms of the survival of a farm.
They're recommending that the countercyclical payment program be converted from what it is now, where it's triggered by price drops, to be triggered by the product of the national target price for each commodity times the national yield. So if you have a drop in that, it would trigger a release of of income, of countercyclical revenue insurance payment to farmers.
That's one portion of the program. About the LDP, or the loan deficiency payments, the rates would be reduced down to a new lower safety net level.
They're basically been politically set in the 2002 Farm Bill. And at times, it's pretty clear that they did stimulate larger production of some of the supported commodities, and that's what got us in trouble with the WTO in our cotton program. And Canada is set in motion the process to take us to the WTO in our corn program. We're probably vulnerable in other areas. So out of deference to bringing our programs in line with the rules of international trade, the administration is proposing to lower loan rates to an 85% of a five-year moving average international market price, dropping the high and low.
This is sometimes referred to as the Olympic average of the last 5 years of market prices. It means if there were a severe drop in prices, there would be an 85% safety net, but that the loan rate would be low enough to allow the market to function freely. Well, direct payments to farmers would continue if the Bush Farm Bill policy were adopted as proposed. There are some interesting twists, though, in how those might be influenced. For instance, Bob Thompson at the University of Illinois says there is a way to opt out of the LDP and the countercyclical portions of the proposal and instead take a bigger direct payment. It is predicated on environmental and conservation provisions.
In exchange for giving up a claim on either LDPs or countercyclical payments, there's a conservation direct payment program with a stepped-up direct payment rate that, in exchange for a fairly aggressive environmental and conservation cross-compliance provision, a farmer can lock in annual direct payments as, in effect, compensation for providing environmental services.
The ag policy expert notes that farmers and ranchers are the stewards of half the land surface of the United States. He says the environmental direct payment would be a way for corn and soybean farmers, for instance, to lock in a larger government payment annually on the idea that LDP and countercyclical payments might not be in play over the next several years if the biofuels boom continues. All those payments, by the way, would be capped in a couple of forms. The administration's proposal would eliminate the three-entity rule and dramatically lower the government payment cap. It would be reduced to no greater than $360,000 in payments as long as the adjusted gross income of the farm was less than $200,000. So no farm could get more than $360,000 in payments. Should the farm make more than $200,000 on the AGI, that's the taxable income on the 1040, then there wouldn't be any payments distributed. One other note here, under the proposal, if a farm was received in a 1031 exchange, that farm would not be eligible for commodity programs. The Bush Farm Bill plan redistributes some of the money it expects to save through payment caps put on commodity programs for crops like corn, soybeans, and wheat. Those dollars and others are headed to fruit and vegetable growers. This line item is a direct result of recent WTO rulings against cotton provisions of the 2002 version of the Farm Bill, says Bob Thompson. That ruling dinged the U.S. for excluding direct payments to farmers if they converted, relatively speaking, row crop land to fruit and vegetable production.
We've really got to get rid of that exclusion, and the administration proposes removing it. But in exchange for that, there's quite a bit of compensation for the fruit and vegetable industry. There's a slug of money for research and product promotion, both domestic and international product promotion. But there's also at least $2 billion for buying up fruits and vegetables to increase the fruit and vegetable component of the school lunch program, as well as other nutrition programs run by the Department of Agriculture.
So the fruit and vegetable provisions of the Bush Farm Bill proposal cover specialty crops research and nutrition as it serves the school lunch program. Speaking of nutrition, the proposal would rename the food stamp program the Food and Nutrition Program. In the same vein, there would also be money to increase research, data collection, and certification of the organic ag industry, and $1.6 billion in loans to all 1,200 rural-certified critical care hospitals.
Rural development, there's quite a bit of money for rural hospitals. Rural health care is a big problem across much of the country and the most focused program that's proposed relates to rural hospitals. The others, there's some money for catch-up of infrastructure projects like water and sewer projects in rural communities.
There is one other note from the policy specialist at the University of Illinois. Thompson says the fruit and vegetable industry has become a very large and important export market for the nation, and that the money provided in the Bush administration Farm Bill proposal should help maintain what he calls a vital sector of agriculture. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
It's a Friday afternoon, and we're joined this afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market, not by Bruce Bostert, our normal analyst, but by Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Todd. Nice, cool, crisp afternoon in central Illinois.
You bet. It's cool and crisp. 15 degrees, I think, outside temperature here in the Friends Plaza at WILL. A couple of notes you asked me as I picked up the phone and talked to you before we finished up that last piece. About the AGI and what that meant on the 200,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, but I'm not certain, I'm almost positive that what that is on the 1040, your adjusted gross income is like line 32, but it's what you pay taxes on. And in this case, that's what the farmer pays taxes on. If he's married, that's his income, his wife's income. If she has an outside job, if he has an outside job, anything you get from the stocks and the bonds or whatever else. And I think that's capped at $200,000. Anything over that in total in adjusted gross income, there would not be any commodity payments. $360,000 is down from, I want to say $2.5 million, but I don't recall what the top is at the moment. And there would be no three-entity rule, so there would just be one entity. If you're over $200,000, you don't get commodity payments. And if you could collect as much as $360,000, but that's only if your adjusted gross income's below 200 grand after that. So whatever you take off of your expenses. And if
that
it
item
in,
plus the 1031 seems to be creating a lot of concern in the Midwest. And a couple of things, you know, the old if you hit the lottery ticket, so to speak, or if you are successful, and like Senator Grassley from Iowa that make $160,000 and have a family farm of 800 acres, it pushes him over the cap. The other one is that people feel that, you know, when you trade ground, and it can be done for various reasons on 1031 exchanges, that it does hurt people that try to trade for larger parcels or move in one thing or the other. And the one thing that I think that the populist rule is, if you do make income, you still have to pay taxes on it, and usually that's 30%. So we all have to pay our due share of income tax, but those are the two provisions that I hear the most consternation and feeling that it's a little bit unfair to agriculture.
I think you'll hear a lot more of that over time, and as we go through the policy debates, we'll talk more about it on
the air.
A lot
of people said it's dead on arrival, so, you know, that I think that's also possible, too. And hopefully, you know, our local Congressman Tim Johnson, you know, he is listening today, too, and takes note of it.
Yeah, if he's not, I'm hopeful that maybe his agricultural folks are. I think they do from time to time.
And also our U.S. senators from Illinois, too.
Yeah, I'm guessing that Barack Obama's awful busy today. We'll see, because you know what we need to do real quick is to let you talk maybe for about 25 seconds about the marketplace, because we've
got to
move
on. Well, I think today was a warning shot over the bear's head that the bulls are still in complete control of the futures deal, and basis is a factor there. The farmer selling has been slowed down considerably. Still, you know, at our market meetings, you know, the conversation about new crop acreage is still quite popular to talk about. I even had a handshake from a very large grain company that had a booth at KZ, and they were talking about larger acreage, and then I had other people telling me about smaller acreage, you know, more in line with what people are guessing, like 7 to 8 million acres. So it is a topic of conversation, and it's part of the great debate and the great market challenge in the next 30 to 45 days.
Well, we appreciate you being in that debate with us.
Have a profitable day. It's always nice to talk to you and Dave, and have a profitable day.
You too. Thanks much. Paul Cooley filling in this afternoon for Bruce Bostert, who's away. He usually airs on this station on Wednesday afternoons, of course, joining us on a Friday today. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with the folks at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Starting March 1st, cell phones will be off limits inside the Champaign County Courthouse. Chief Judge Tom DeFantis says cell phones are a distraction if they go off in court, but newer phones can also take pictures and video. And that's against the statewide ban on cameras in the courtroom. DeFantis is advising anybody who brings a cell phone to the courthouse to store them in their cars, since security won't be able to hold the phones for them. Lieutenant Governor Pat Quinn says other cities have taken action to protect motorists from pirate tow truck operators, and the city of Chicago needs to do the same. Quinn says he's proposing an ordinance in response to reports of drivers who haul damaged cars from accident scenes and then demand $1,000 or more to give them back to their rightful owners. The Illinois Prisoner Review Board is defending its recent decision to parole two convicted killers, saying they pose minimal security risks and have been rehabilitated. Cook County State's Attorney Richard Devine has strongly objected to the paroles. He says under current guidelines, the men would have received harsher punishments. Illinois' Attorney General says complaints about counterfeit cashier's checks are on the rise, and residents should be on watch for check scams. Attorney General Lisa Madigan says her office received 290 complaints of check scams in 2006 and has gotten 59 in January of this year alone. By announcing his presidential plans in Springfield tomorrow, Barack Obama will tap into a long history, both good and bad. The overwhelming historical image in Springfield will be Abraham Lincoln. Obama's making his announcement outside the old state capitol, where Lincoln served as a lawmaker and delivered a famous speech about the importance of uniting the country. The location may underline Obama's own experience as a lawmaker and his image as a uniter. But Springfield also has some history that Obama probably won't mention. As the state capitol, it's seen plenty of government corruption. It was the site of deadly race riots and lynchings in 1908. And the famous Donner Party began its wagon expedition in Springfield, only to end in disaster and accusations of cannibalism. AM 580 will cover Obama's announcement live tomorrow morning from Springfield, beginning at 10 o'clock Central Time. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.
As it happens on this Friday afternoon, Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, is not available, but we do have our own Mike Sola's forecast for the two-state region. It looks like this for tonight, partly to mostly cloudy skies. Lows will range from 5 below zero in northwestern Illinois to 15 in far southern parts of the state. In western Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy. Elsewhere, partly sunny. Highs will range from 11 in northwestern Illinois to 32 in southern Illinois tomorrow. Winds tomorrow on Saturday will be just slightly stronger than today. In the south, winds will remain in the 5 to 10 mile an hour range, while the winds in the north between 10 and 15 miles an hour. The extended forecast calls for snow showers across the two-state region, expected to bring just a dusting, though, in the northern areas and central sections late this weekend and early into next week. Southern areas may get a mix of rain and some snow or possibly some freezing rain on Sunday. More vigorous snow is possible next week with 1 to 3 inches of fresh snow possible in the south on Monday and Tuesday. And temperatures will remain below average in the next week. There will be a slight warm-up with the arrival of the weather system on Monday. Above freezing temperatures will spread to the north of the Interstate 70 corridor before falling back to the far southern tip of Illinois. That on Tuesday and Wednesday. It's my pleasure to be here with you this afternoon on a Friday during the closing market report. Be sure to tune in to AM 580 tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. Central Time for Commodity Week. And don't forget that you can always pick that program up and a lot of the rest of the programming that
that we give to you in terms of ag on our website at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Sign up for our newsletter if you have the opportunity. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.